The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Right now we're going to talk about the 221 Plus group. So lots of you listening, everybody listening, let's be honest, will remember the 221 Plus group born out of the cervical check controversy. And I guess what was so unique about it and unique in how we as the public engaged with them was that the voices that we all remember, the most prominent voices from that group and from that period, were the voices of the patients and of the patients' families. It was a patient-led group, and a body of work and research has been carried out on that front and the impact of the group and how patient-led advocacy improves patient outcomes. And we're going to talk a little bit about that with Dr. Elaine Kinsella, research lead from the University of Limerick, in a moment. But with me in studio, along with Elaine, is Lynn Fenton and Caoimhe O'Neill Ford, who are both patient representatives with the 221 Plus group. You're very welcome, everybody, and thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you.
I guess maybe, Lynn, to give people a sense of how important the group has been and continues to be for people and for patients and patient outcomes.
The group has been a lifeline to quite a lot of us, in that when we found out that we were part of the cervical check failures in Ireland, we didn't know who to turn to. There was no advocacy group or there was no support system. We felt on our own, and it was so very overwhelming trying to find out what was going on and things like that. So with joining the group, then we were able to speak to like-minded people, and through speaking with other patients who were involved in the same thing, you had a collective, I suppose, source of understanding. You know, people just got it. You didn't have to explain yourself all that much, but it was a learning process as well for all of us.
How did you end up in a situation whereby you were reaching out to the group? So tell me a little bit about when you were diagnosed and when you found out that you were kind of in this cohort of people who maybe should have been caught earlier.
I was diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2015. And then in 2019, I found out that I was involved in the cervical check failures through the ARCOG report. And I for a long time, I didn't understand. I was going through the process of the ARCOG report and giving details, and actually didn't understand myself how I was involved. I could not comprehend it. I couldn't get it into my head, because I suppose I was still dealing with the whole trauma of cancer, even 4 years later, and trying to get my life back on track somewhat. And once I found out that I was involved, and it took me a few weeks to kind of come around it. It was just before Christmas time in 2019. And then I reached out, I think, in the January and was able to find like-minded people. It was really, really a lifeline that, you know, I didn't kind of know that I needed, but it was, it was very welcome.
And was the value in it that you had, as you say, like-minded people who could join you kind of on this quest maybe for more information and clarity and everything else? Or was it just that there was like-minded, you know, that there was people going through the same thing, and it was just, there was a value in just having a community?
It was a bit of both, really, because we were, let's say, initially, for a lot of women, not for all women, there's some women still going through active cancer and active treatment that way. But there was there's an awful lot of us who are left with, let's say, bladder damage, incontinence damage because of different treatments, and that you have problems, lifelong problems for the rest of your life. And some of them, it's very personal, and you don't know whether you want to share it. And you might have maybe shared it with some of your girlfriends or people that you know at home, but they were just like, you know, they might not understand it, or they might not want to know about it or want to talk about it, or they don't know how to talk about it, you know. And so you, within the community, within the 221 Plus group, you could talk to a lot of people, and they ran workshops for us. So you had an immediate place to get information from, you know, in understanding what we were going through. Even the trauma of having cancer, the trauma of finding out that your cancer could have been prevented, which is very deep, and it could be the piece between being able to have more children or being able to have any children and not. You know, that's very traumatic in itself. So to meet other people who are in the same situation and to be able to talk to them, and through talking, there's healing.
And Caoimhe, maybe tell us about your own journey, kind of from diagnosis to the point that you would have reached out to this group.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed when I was 26. I was living in Cork. I was diagnosed.
You must have been one of the youngest, were you?
Yeah, I was one of the youngest, certainly if not the youngest. Mine was a follow-up to my smear process, but they misread some of my slides. So yeah, I was very young. Up to the time that I came to 2-to-1 Plus, I never met another woman with cervical cancer, certainly never my own age. So I was diagnosed with that. I went through, it's a very lonely journey, and you know, there is a stick when you're young about being brave as if there was ever another option. And I think people kind of sometimes overlook young people when they're sick because they just have to get on with it. So I went through all that. And then in 2018, Vicky stood on the steps of the courthouse. And that weekend, there was a promise that everybody who was part of the initial cohort of the 2-to-1 Plus would be told. And I was at work on a Monday and I missed a call on my phone. And the voice message was left to say that I was part of the 208, I think it was initially.
Yeah.
And would I give them a ring back whenever I was free? So from there, there was a meeting set up, which since has become 2-to-1 Plus, with Vicky Phelan at the helm, Lorraine Walsh, Stephen Teep, and I suppose the patient representative title as it is was born from that. So it's been a huge comfort to me since then. I have a whole cohort of people, like, you know, I've obviously dealt with infertility myself, infertility issues. And to meet a cohort of those people has been a lifesaver to me, as well as the advocacy piece that that was, I suppose, led by Vicky initially and then carried on through over the years by the rest of us, I suppose.
What was that? Can you remember what that was like when, on top of dealing with the cancer and the diagnosis and the treatment and going through all of that, as you say, kind of a very lonely journey, to have all of this kind of thrust upon you? Suddenly I'm in this group as well. Obviously the group, it was great to be part of it, as you say, and as Lynn sets out as well. But it's not a group you want to be part of. Yeah. And pardon the kind of colloquial language, but it must melt your head kind of when you have so much other stuff going on that, oh my God, I'm in this as well.
I remember sitting in a room, we all met in a hotel in Athlone, and we were all sitting in a room, and I remember just sitting there, what am I doing here? And I went with my mother, and people kept coming over commiserating with my mother, assuming that she was the woman who had been affected by cervical cancer instead of me. And I was like, I just don't understand how my life has brought me to this part. But you know, you can't change the past. The past is the past. It is what it is. And 2-to-1 Plus has been huge to me in my healing journey and in the support that I've gotten to where I am today, where I do have quite a positive outlook on life and what's, you know, in the future for myself and women in general.
So as I said right at the outset, this kind of body of work and research has been carried out into the group and how it has worked and what has kind of flowed out from all of that work, and done by a team in the University of Limerick. And Dr. Elaine Kinsella, who's a research lead there, is with me as well. So Elaine, tell us about the work you did do, what you were looking into.
So the project aimed to document and evidence and assess the work and impact of 2-to-1 Plus, both as an organisation, but also the patient representatives who, like Lynn and Kiva we have here today, since 2018. So drawing on the perspectives of 2-to-1 Plus members and patient representatives, but also other stakeholders and health and medical professionals as well. And it was also an opportunity to reflect on how 2-to-1 Plus might further develop its operations into the future. And how they may continue to influence progressive change in the provision of healthcare for women in Ireland.
So what did you find when you looked into all of that?
Yeah, so there are two phases of the research. The first was a stakeholder analysis, where we sought to understand the diverse perspectives from a range of different individuals, groups and organisations that have worked with 2-to-1 Plus since 2018. And there were three key findings from those interviews. So the first was the legacy of patient support. So 2-to-1 Plus were seen as providing an effective support group for the members of 2-to-1 Plus and their families, particularly emotional and psychological support. Secondly, they were seen to be very effective in putting the patient voice first, which played a really important role in advocacy. So the role of patient representatives was considered by stakeholders central to the work of 2-to-1 Plus. They were considered as valuable assets in advocating for the development of healthcare services, but also playing a really important role in decision-making processes that led to better decision-making, particularly in terms of health. And the third key finding from that phase of the research was that actually the collective aspects of the work of 2-to-1 Plus have improved healthcare service delivery for women in Ireland in many ways. And there were many tangible ways that were described in the research.
Yeah, talk to me. Give us just a couple of examples, the tangible ways this has improved healthcare for women.
So, for example, in terms of the the in terms of the public disclosures policy, that was a really important one. In terms of making it, I suppose, normalising talking about people's experiences in terms of like talking about cervical cancer has led to more openness in terms of the culture in Ireland of talking about it, because that was one of the things that came through, was actually there's still quite a lot of stigma associated with cervical cancer, and many women felt that they couldn't come forward or didn't want to share that information with their family and friends. So that openness in terms of the culture, but advocating on behalf of the people who've been affected was really, really key in terms of improving the healthcare, raising awareness.
Well, one of the kind of things that happens around any issue, and it might not be cervical cancer, it could be anything else, cervical cancer, it might be anything else, is that people, and the media are involved in this as well, they talk about a group of people without actually talking to the group of people.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I guess, what some of this research kind of speaks to, is that, you know, like that there's a huge value in actually speaking to the people central to a story.
Oh, definitely. And it's actually very important in getting the truth of it out, because what can happen is you're generalizing and you're catching on to something a bit like Chinese whispers, and then it'll get legs and it'll have tails and ears by the time it gets down to the next person. And you often lose the importance of it in that, but you also can create incorrect information within that as well, you know, which can be as damaging, if not more damaging, to some people who are in the systems.
And Caoimhe, I have to ask, because people will be wondering, I mean, how's the health today?
Good, good.
Great.
Cancer-free, thank God, and planning to be, hopefully, for a long time.
Lynn?
Cancer-free at the moment, but I would like to just make a comment on when people ask that question.
Okay.
Because in particular with people with cervical cancer, because it's one of the most invasive cancers, and there are some of the treatments that are used for cervical cancers which are nothing short of barbaric, really. And if you know the ins and outs of it, you would absolutely understand. So I think just ask somebody, how are you? And if they're cancer-free, that's great, but it does not mean they are well. And with, in
there's still scars, well, there, and always will be.
There's issues, yeah. Well, there's obviously mental scars and emotional scars that you will deal with for the rest of your life because of being, you know, maybe infertile and not being able to have children, but also your bladder damage, bowel damage, lymphedema, the list goes on and on, that you are dealing with. And they're crippling things at times,
yeah.
You know. And in particular for a woman, it's very, very difficult, but they're not really talked about a lot of the time either.
And maybe that's because like Elaine talked about it as well, in terms of the research about taboos and stigmas that form part of it. And maybe that's kind of the next step in it, is that there's a stigma, those stigmas, those taboos, they're broken down when it comes to all those.
It adds to
kind of
the
consequential problems.
It adds to the embarrassment of it.
Yeah.
No woman wants to turn around and admit that she wets herself, you know. I'll admit on air here in front of the whole nation that yes, I wet myself because of damage to my bladder, you know, and it's horrible. We shouldn't have to hide it, and we shouldn't have to, you know, it should be kind of normalised, and it is a person. No, you're not going to wear it in your sleeve and go around the town, you know, like shouting and roaring about it. But
I know.
Want it to be normalised so that people can talk about it, so that people aren't embarrassed to go forward and ask for help with all of these things. So.
All right. Well, that suggests the advocacy work is never done.
Never done.
Really.
We'll keep fighting on.
Listen, thanks a million, everybody, for joining me. I really mean it. Lynn Fenton and Caoimhe O'Neill Ford, who are both patient representatives with the 221 Plus Group, and Dr. Elaine Kinsella, who's a research lead from the University of Limerick, where this body of work was carried out, this body of research. Again, thank you all very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.